All right. I'd like to talk about one aspect of the data and one aspect of the findings, and that is about managerialism and its effects on academics' writing and on their writing practices. First of all, I want to say a little bit about the kinds of pressures that academics' writing practices are under from lots of different directions. We didn't really ask our participants directly about managerialism, but it came up as a sort of thread that was going through all different kinds of writing and was affecting writing practices in a lot of different ways. So one of the main ways that managerialism is manifested is through policy, particularly policy, some of the things that Karen mentioned around research evaluation exercises, the NSS student evaluation exercises, and so on. But the REF is very important for institutions in terms of their income. Research income is allocated depending on how well a department scores on the REF. Therefore, all of the institutions that we came in contact with for the project and every department has its own kind of internal policies then that they use to try and encourage their academics to write the kind of things that they expect will score highly on the REF. So it wasn't universally the same, the kind of policies that were in place. Some departments had lists of target journals that they expected academics to aim for in their publishing. Some had more implicit policies, but all of them had some kind of targets for people around how much they should publish, in what period of time, what kinds of things they should publish, which genres of writing they should focus on, and in some cases, what venues they should publish in. And I'll show you some examples later about that. As well as policy-level pressures on writing, there are also some disciplinary pressures that writing is under. Sometimes the demands that departments put on their academics' writing to satisfy the REF and other kind of managerial concerns don't always fit very well with their disciplinary preferences and with the disciplinary cultures. For example, some people told us that they prefer writing in certain genres, that's the ones that are valued in their discipline. But that wasn't the same as what they were asked to do or pushed to do for the REF. Another aspect of pressure for people on their writing and things which affected people's writing in the project was more kind of individual things, specifically the history that people bring to their own writing and also where they're going. So it was important for us to see writing in its kind of context of where people have come from and what their career goals were and what they were trying to achieve. Some of the academics that we spoke to had personal things in their life which directly affected their writing. For example, two of them had children during the project. One person had two bereavements during the project, and these were things which affected directly not only how much time they had for writing, but also the way that they did the writing and the things that they thought about and the things that informed the writing that they did. We also had participants whose PhD was in a different discipline to the department that they were now working in, and that shaped things as well. People said, you know, I write in a different way because my background is in this sort of discipline, and so I'm not necessarily typical for the discipline that I'm in now. Also, people had different goals for their writing and goals for their career in general. Not everyone wants to be a famous academic, right? Some people want to do something a bit different with their writing. And I'll talk a little bit about that more later as well. And then Karen also mentioned earlier that there are pressures around digital technologies and associated with that, the metrics which are involved. Because now, for example, most academics are expected to have some kind of online profile, a departmental profile. They very often also have some kind of information about themselves on ResearchGate or academia.edu, those kind of sites. And because you put information about what you write on those sites, it can therefore be tracked and counted. And because it can be tracked and counted, of course, it is tracked and counted. So those kind of digital opportunities make it possible for people to say, okay, how many publications have you got? How many citations have you got? What's your H index? What's your RG score? All these different numbers. So these are things that people experience as pressures and also sometimes as opportunities, and things which change the way academics write and also the way they feel about their writing. Not everyone universally embraced this idea of putting things about themselves online. Similarly, not everyone embraces the idea of tweeting or blogging, or those that do embrace that idea may not have the opportunity to do it as much or in the ways that they might want. And finally, just when you thought it was safe to go back into the water, writing practices are also under pressure, potentially, from the kind of student expectations which have probably changed as a consequence of some of the changes in higher education that Karen talked about. Students now pay fees, so they might be positioned a little bit more as customers than kind of the students, and that might affect their expectations about the kinds of writing that they do and also the kinds of feedback and the kinds of comments they get from their tutors. They expect quick answers to their questions, they want responses to their emails at 3 o'clock in the morning, and so on. And it may be that as academics, I know personally, when I am teaching and giving students feedback on their writing, I'm often kind of trying to shape them in my own image. I'm trying to create mini academics and trying to get them to write like a scholar. I'm always saying to them, think like a scholar. But maybe for the students themselves, they actually want to just get the assignment done and get a job, right? They're very concerned about getting a good job these days. So these are things which do affect the relationship between academics and their students and the writing that goes on between them. So what I'll do is talk a little bit about some of these kind of targets and pressures and what our participants said about those. And you'll see from some of the quotations that I'll show you from the interviews that there is a kind of sense, a lot of people had a sense that the targets are getting harder and harder. And so you don't just have to meet the target, you have to stand on your hands and meet the target back. almost everybody, I think everybody that we spoke to, had some kind of targets for their writing written into their contract in some way. And this was often tied to things like probation and promotion, as you can see in this quote from Emma. Emma was a new lecturer in marketing. So she was in her first job post-PhD in a research-intensive university. So in that probationary period, she was expected to publish a certain amount. And also, as you can see, it's not just the quantity of papers, but there's also a quality marker in there. It's 3-star, right? And you'll see that in marketing, everyone we spoke to in marketing talked about 3-star, 4-star. That was a big concern for them. You probably know that the REF, the research evaluation exercise in the UK, uses a 1-4-star rating system. And this was something which loomed large for most of the academics we spoke to, this idea of, is your research 4-star or 3-star, internationally world-leading or internationally excellent, or what? We also asked heads of departments, about the kinds of writing that they expected academics to be doing in their department and what the standard was, what did they expect in terms of success. And these are the kind of things that they said.
Excuse me, what discipline is that?
Well, I haven't actually put the disciplines on there because there are not so many heads of department, and I was worried that it might make them identifiable because there's only one per department that we spoke to. But this is in social sciences. It's in one of the pilot disciplines, actually. Yeah, so this is not marketing. It's not the same as Emma's. So Stephanie says the minimum that they would expect would be one good publication a year. So there's keep in the 4 year or 5 year ref cycle, it's usually a 4 to 5 year period. One good publication a year. So there's that's for the ref, it's also for promotion, and it's also for everything else. I don't know what that everything else would include, but it seems to be very important, right, that you're producing a publication every year, and it has to be good. So what does it mean, a good publication? We also asked heads of department that, but I want to give you a range of quotations. So I'll show you one from another marketing academic, and when he talks about what is considered good or what kind of quality he's aiming for. So Charles was a senior lecturer. He'd been in his post for about 10 years. And he had a feeling that it had got tougher. When he started, it seemed less of a pressure. It was try and get a couple of 2 stars, a couple of 3 stars. And if you get included in the ref, that was a kind of bonus. That was like a side effect of doing good research, which is really what the ref should be, right? It's a measure of the research quality that you produce anyway. It's not supposed to be the target. But it seems that in his perception, things were getting harder and you had to aim for the top rating, which is 4 star. Now you can see here that Charles says a 4 star journal. He's not talking about 4 star research. As you probably know, the ref ranks the research itself. It's basically a peer review exercise. So research is read by a panel and then they decide if that particular output is 3 star, 4 star, whatever. In Charles's department, there was a list of target journals, and the journals were listed as either 4 star, 3 star, 2 star, or 1 star. And they were told to aim for the 4 star journals. So in fact, it's not only his research quality really that's being assessed, it's the quality of the journal in which he publishes that's actually being measured here. And that was something that was really prominent for all the marketing academics. They all talked about this journal list. It's the association, Chartered Association of Business Schools in the UK, that publishes this list of journals. So some of the quotes that I've shown you so far are to do with scholarly writing or research outputs, but that was not the only aspect of writing that was subject to targets. People also talked about targets around teaching and around grant applications, for example, as you can see here. So you can kind of sense a bit of distrust in Alex of some of these targets. You know, why is it 100,000? Why is it not 89? It's a good question, isn't it? So people are subject to a range of metrics, and they don't always have faith that those are actually useful metrics or even perhaps appropriate metrics. And this is quite a common sentiment. So we asked, one of the questions we asked the heads of departments was, what sort of writing do you expect the staff in your department to be doing? We were interested not just in scholarly writing, but also in things like emails and other kinds of administrative writing. So next I'll show you a quote from a different head of a department, and this time the discipline is history. So this was quite interesting to me, the way she says that. We're encouraged to value most research writing. And actually, this was also the case in our project when we asked people about their writing. They usually talked first and foremost about the research writing. That's what they were mostly wanting to talk about and mostly occupied by. However, it's interesting, it seems here like in theory, on paper, we value research writing most, but there's a kind of tacit acknowledgement that there's a lot of other stuff that people are asked to write, which takes time away from the research writing, or maybe the NSS stuff and all the other things that people have to do. So there's an acknowledgement that although in theory research writing is the most important, actually when you look at what people are doing, it might be they're spending a lot of their time and effort doing other things as well. And you can see this in the frustration expressed by Diane. Does it seem familiar to you? God, she's God. Now, if a marketing professor is complaining about having to justify a market, that is a sign to me something is wrong. So this kind of comment was also fairly common in the data. People sometimes talked about having to put the same information on different forms and kind of repeat information several times for different purposes, and that was a bit of a source of frustration for people. So there's a lot of kind of accountability related writing which isn't actually achieving research, it's about showing that you're doing research or proving that you're achieving a certain standard in your teaching. So this is kind of bits of writing that really are aimed at management, they're not really aimed at getting the job done as such. Next, I want to talk a little bit about discipline and how that was a factor. So I want to show you this really nice image that an academic in America made. Now, it's probably too small for you to find your own discipline in there, right? But it's a kind of periodic table, which I thought was quite interesting, because she's got humanities over here, and then professions down here, and sort of formal sciences and so on. I think applied linguistics, some of you are applied linguists, is down here somewhere. I'm not sure, can't see it now. So the disciplines that we focused on for the project were, as far as I could find them, history is here, marketing is here, and then over there, that's not actually maths, is it? But I couldn't find maths, so I thought that was the nearest thing I could find to maths. So you can see that they're kind of in different points of the table, and that would suggest that there may be quite important disciplinary differences in the way that writing is done. And this was the case from the things that people said about their writing. If you're trying to write one publication a year, you obviously can't write one monograph a year, right? Because the monograph takes a very long time and a lot of work to do. So a lot of the historians said to us that they felt under pressure to produce published peer-reviewed journal articles either instead of or in addition to the monographs. But the monograph was the genre that the historians really valued. They saw that as their core way of creating knowledge in their discipline. So that was a pressure for them in terms of the amount you have to publish, but also in terms of impact. The ref expects people to show impact beyond academia, some change in practice in the real world. And that was difficult if you're writing monographs, because not so many people buy monographs, they're very expensive. Non-academics often don't read them, they don't have a massive market in the kind of lay audience. So that was a pressure for historians. Another aspect of disciplinary writing was also affected by the stage that people were at in their career. So it wasn't just at any one point, what are you expected to write and what do you want to write, but also how senior people were or how well established they were in their career affected the kinds of writing that they felt they had the freedom to do. Do you know who that is?
Scott
Erasmus. Erasmus, yeah. That's cool. So we spoke to one professor in mathematics who'd written a maths book for children. So this wasn't a peer-reviewed academic book in the sense that people would cite it. And he said he really enjoyed writing this maths book. He felt it was an important part of his disciplinary work to kind of bring up, he described bringing up the next generation of mathematicians. However, he says, it's not something he would recommend to someone who was starting out. Robert was in his 60s, near towards the end of his career. So at the beginning of your career, when you want to establish yourself, you need to be doing those publications which are aimed at other scholars. And it's difficult for people to do other kinds of writing, trade books and trade journals and so on. I'm going to show you a very old cartoon which you'll have seen before about a dog. Do you know this one? On the internet, no one knows you're a dog. So I want to say a little bit about what our participants told us about digital kinds of writing, digital publishing, or other forms of digital communication that involved writing. We asked people about things like tweeting and blogging, and do you do those things, and if so, why, and if not, why not? And their responses were interesting, very mixed. Some people felt that that was a bit trivial and they didn't want to get involved in it, and other people saw it as something very useful. And no surprises to find that the marketing people liked tweeting. But there's something quite interesting here. So this is Emma, who was in her first post-PhD academic post. And she described tweeting as a form of brand awareness. And that was really interesting. I thought, so my brand, she sees herself as having a brand, and her department as having a brand. So you can see how marketing discourse, the kind of discourse of marketization, has entered people's thinking about their writing. But also, she says, when the day dawns that I have anything published, it'll be all over Twitter. So there's an element of confidence there. Like, if you don't feel that you have enough to say, you won't do it, and you'll only do that kind of thing when you've got publications and you've got something to boast about, as it were. But it wasn't only the younger academics who were interested in using things like Twitter and blogs. Some of the more established academics were also very interested in that. However, they didn't always have time to engage with those forms of writing, or they didn't feel that it was valued to the same extent as other forms of writing. So David, again, was a very senior academic, and he was quite excited about the idea of blogs and things like that in his field. But he said, it's a question of time, but not only time. If it were valued, if he saw it as valued by his institution, he maybe would find the time. However, he says explicitly, it's not valued as far as I can see. Because it doesn't really count, right? It's one of these things which the metrics are not counting as something referable. If you've written a blog piece, who cares? It doesn't count as one of your publications. One blog piece a year, that would be nice if that was enough, but it's not. So people didn't prioritise that kind of writing sometimes, even though they found it very interesting. So I want to kind of begin to sum up, and then we'll have a chance for you to ask questions or make comments on some of the data. So how does managerialism affect academics' writing practices? Well, one of the main things that we found was pressures around the number and the type of research publications that people felt able to do or felt that they had to do. And this was particularly journal articles and 4-star journal articles. not books, or as well as books. There was a perceived increase in the amount of writing that was associated with accountability, activities to show what you've done because it's being counted and reported, and along with that there was a sense that if it's not being counted, it's not really worth doing. There was some distrust, as we saw from Alex and also from other people that we spoke to, a distrust of the targets and the kind of cult of performance that you have to show all the time what you're doing, and kind of publicly and in a very transparent way show what you're doing so that everyone can see. There was also, I think, associated with that a kind of fear and shame if someone hadn't published very much, as in the case of Emma. She didn't have any publications, and she talked about that quite a lot as a source of concern and anxiety. And people worried about being able to produce enough and of the right quality. Somebody said, talked about one-hit wonders, and he said, I can do a four-star publication, no problem, once. I don't know if I can keep doing it all the time. Right? And there was a kind of ambiguous relationship between what was valued and what was seen to be valued. As we saw from some of the quotations, research writing is the thing that is said to be the most valued. However, in practice, people felt sometimes that there wasn't enough time for that because of other kinds of writing they had to do. And then we also saw, in some cases, a kind of internalization of management rhetoric, particularly this idea of four-star, three-star, two-star. In marketing departments, everybody talked about that, and they didn't add anything about the description of what that meant, or any description of what they saw as excellent or good or worthwhile. It was just get a two-star, like that signified something which they felt they had to achieve. And there, I think, I will stop talking and ask you if you have any comments or questions that you want to make.